Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, what should we make of the increasingly diverging range of predictions for stock markets in the coming year? On the one hand, there's optimism that with a vaccine being rolled out and Brexit and the US elections settled, sort of, that markets are set fair for 2021. But on the other hand, there are gloomy warnings that this year could bring an historic bursting of a stock market bubble. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. You'll always be able to find differing views of the outlook for stock markets, but right now the differences seem very big indeed. On the one side, we have the stock market bulls who see a COVID vaccine being rolled out and economic data recovering, and then reason that 2021 will be a year of new records for shares. But on the other side, we have the stock market bears who see only reasons to be fearful, and some have even suggested that 2021 could witness an historic stock market crash. Which view is right and what can you do about it? To answer that, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome along. Why don't you start, I guess, by responding to what I said there. Is it fair to say that the outlooks for markets are becoming more extreme? The optimists are getting more optimistic and the pessimists are getting more pessimistic.
Yes, hi Ed. I think that's a fairly good analysis, actually. If you look at what's happened over the last, 10, 12 years since the financial crisis, really since this long bull market that we're still enjoying got underway, then we've said all along, oh, this feels like a really unloved bull market. It feels as if no one quite believes it. And I think that was always seen by people like me as an indication that this could go further, because typically at the top of a bull market, when a bull market is about to turn over into a bear market, you don't have that negativity. Everyone gets sucked into this positive outlook for the markets. And I guess what we've got at the moment is a change in that situation, that just now we're starting, and really maybe we've had for the last 6 months or so, we've had a feeling among some investors that things really are positive and they're piling into more speculative investments. So they are more optimistic. And that, of course, in turn is making the naturally bearish people, the people that worry about the state of the market, more negative, because they see that as an indication that maybe we're approaching the top of the market.
Yeah, you hear these phrases, you know, irrational exuberance is one of them. I guess the vaccine and COVID has a lot to do with this. We had, you know, such dire news about COVID last year, something that a year ago we didn't know would even happen. And then, of course, we have a vaccine. And in the meantime, markets have, you know, fallen very sharply, of course, but actually recovered. So when the vaccine's come along, it's come along at a time where markets are pretty much where they were. They'd recovered their losses, and it's just really added to this sort of feeling of momentum on the positive side for markets.
Yes, and that, of course, is we've talked about this on a number of occasions. This is what markets do. They look through the bad news to the better news to come. So, you know, all the way through this pandemic, the more optimistic investors have been looking to a time in the future when we have a vaccine, when we can get back to work, we can get back to going out, doing all the things that we did before the pandemic. And they've made the assumption that the basic structure of the economy has not been damaged by by COVID-19. Mm. It's still basically in place, and that once people get back to doing all the things that they used to do, then profits will start growing again. That's been the optimistic view, and that, you know, typically is the right approach, because, you know, things do get back to normal in due course. But the question is, has it gone too far too fast, I suppose?
Indeed. Well, I guess, Tom, the prompt for us to talk about this subject today was a note written by a famous investor, Jeremy Grantham. He's one of the founders of GMO, which is a large investment manager operating globally. These notes are basically like articles, aren't they? Sort of somewhere between a kind of newspaper article and a kind of academic paper, I suppose you could say. And this note from Jeremy Grantham was pretty apocalyptic, wasn't it, Tom, in its view that we are in the late stages of a very large stock market bubble and that it could all come crashing down this year. What exactly did that note say?
Yeah, so this was Jeremy Grantham's sort of New Year message to GMO investors. And obviously, he's a very experienced investor. He's been through many cycles over the decades in which he's been active in the markets. And I think what he was doing was he was looking back at previous bubbles that he had experienced in his working life, going right back to the Japanese stock market bubble in the 1980s, and then, of course, the dot-com bubble 10 years later, and then more recently, the housing and credit bubble of 12 years ago, which burst in the financial crisis. And he's just looking at the current situation and saying, look, we've been in a bull market for 12 years, and we are now seeing the types of excessively optimistic behavior, which typically signify the tops of those markets, you know, and I've seen three of these before, and we're seeing all the same things again. I worry, he says, that we are in the middle of a spectacular bubble.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's a really fascinating read, and it's, you know, very well argued case. In support of that case, Grantham throws in some nice sort of factoids, doesn't he, about the scale of what he calls this bubble. He's writing about Tesla. We all know what Tesla is. And he says that its market cap, which is now, which is its value, is now above $600 billion. And that amounts to $1.25 million for every car that Tesla has sold. And you can compare that $1.25 million to just $9,000 for every car that General Motors has sold. General Motors, of course, is a sort of traditional auto manufacturer. And that just sort of, you know, is as a way to explain the scale of the valuation on some parts of the stock market. And another one of these factoids was that last year, there were, and I guess this is in a US context, there were 150 companies over $250 million in size. So 150 quite large companies, which tripled in value. They tripled in value last year. And that 150 is three times as much as in any year in the last decade. And you know, you hear things like that, and it is very persuasive that we're in some kind of late stage bubble territory. These are all very persuasive, Tom, when they're laid out like that. But isn't the truth here that you can always find metrics in the investing world and in stock markets that are behaving in extreme ways? And we have been finding them for years in this market environment. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's all about to be unwound, does it? And I can remember similarly apocalyptic forecasts over the years, you know, the kind of investment notes that make it out into the newspapers because they're so pessimistic. There was one from SocGen a few years back. I think they have an economist called Albert Edwards, who's sometimes described as the perma-bear. And he famously said that stocks were going to be blown to smithereens in about 2015, I think that was. There was an RBS economist who warned that investors should sell everything, and that was in 2016. I mean, maybe these are sort of hyperbolic in the retelling, but we have had these pessimistic forecasts before, Tom. It's easy to be that pessimistic because sooner or later you are going to get proved right. But, you know, there's nothing to say that it's going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, well, it's like the old saying about the stop clock, isn't it? You know, it's right twice a day. And the other saying that springs to mind is that one about, you know, the last seven recessions. No, I've forgotten what the expression is, I know what it is. Yeah, seven of the last five recessions have been forecast by economists. You know, which means, you know.
Yes.
Sorry. So, you know, I mean, it's easier to be negative and to be bearish, and indeed, you know, in some circles, it's more fashionable to be sort of gloomy and pessimistic. The reality, of course, as an investor, is that over the years, it has paid to be an optimist, because, you know, as you mentioned, 2016. There, you know, I mean, if you'd been negative in 2016, you would have missed out on what, I don't know what the exact figures are, but I think the US stock market has probably doubled in value since that point. So, but you know, it's also true to say that these signs of excess do start mounting up towards the end of a bull market. And you know, Grantham, you know, piles on the pressure. He has, you mentioned a couple of them there, but he also talks about the number of initial public offerings, flotations that there were last week, saying, you know, there were more flotations last year than there were in 2000 at the top of the dot-com bubble, including about half of them were these so-called SPACs, S-P-A-C, special purpose vehicles, which are basically, you know, investment banks just collecting a load of money from people to invest in, well, whatever they think of, really. And that is a classic sign. We had that in 1999. People were just raising money to invest in internet technology without really knowing what they were going to invest in. All classic signs of the top of the market.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's move on to what, if anything, investors should do about all this, Tom. I mean, Grantham, we should say, pointedly, does not tell investors to sell everything. If you read the full article, you'll see he basically says, look, in these previous bubbles and bursting of bubbles, you might sell out early to avoid the big crash, but of course you will miss out on growth in that final period, and you have to look at, as he says, the round trip, right? You have to see in the fullness of time whether you're gonna make or lose money by selling out. But what more specifically is his guidance for how to handle the next year, Tom? Because as you say, everyone should be aware that we are in an extreme market situation, even if that doesn't mean necessarily that it's all about to come crashing down.
Yes, I think this is the most interesting part of this discussion, actually, because it's all very well talking, you know, theoretically about, you know, signs of the top of the market or whatever. But as an investor, what you're principally concerned about is, well, just, you know, what exactly can I do about this? And the reason why it's such a difficult topic for investors is that, as Grantham mentions in his piece, in the final sort of months, you know, maybe the final 6 months of a bull market, things really do accelerate. And that's when, you know, that's when share price charts start turning, going straight up the page. We've seen this with Tesla, you know, they start to go almost vertical. I looked at a few share prices recently from previous bubbles. You know, I remember Vodafone 20 years ago did exactly this. Nokia was another example, just started going straight up the page. And if you are not in the market at those times, it's extremely painful to watch other people making lots of money and you're not doing it. You know, but, you know, his definition of, you know, being, you know, doing the right thing is that, you know, is that there are periods when you are just really glad that you weren't in the market. And it's not about catching the top of the market. It's about, you know, reducing your exposure at the right time. But he makes a very good point about the fact that this is not all encompassing. And I think this is sort of what you're pointing to here, Ed, is that if you look at the bubbles that we're talking about, they are sort of isolated. If you look at, you know, what has driven the US stock market in recent years, it is these technology stocks. And actually, most of the companies in the S&P 500, for example, you know, are not in bubble territory. They're not excessively valued. They haven't gone too far. Yes, there may be some froth blown off the market in these very highly valued stocks, but the point that he makes is that you can shelter your portfolio by changing the allocation from the most highly valued areas to some of the less highly valued areas. And the two that he flags up are so-called value shares. So these are the lowly priced, out of favor, more cyclical stocks, which are not expensive at the moment. And also he refers to emerging market shares, which are standing at actually their biggest discount to US shares in something like 50 years. So, you know, there is still value around, and it's a case of adjusting your portfolio to reflect that.
Yeah, yeah. And presumably, Tom, any change that people do think of making, you know, if they're persuaded by this. I mean, they might, I should say, you know, one thing that always occurs to me in these discussions is that you know, even if you're going to be gradual about changes of your allocation because of warnings like this, it's quite a stressful business. It's actually a much easier ride psychologically to not do anything. You know, it's not do anything and just continue to invest and look on the bright side and not get too hung up about the possibility of falls, because they will come along. And just sort of, you know, reason with yourself and come to terms with the fact that you're going to be invested when the stock crash comes, when it comes. But you'll also be there the whole time for all of the upside in those final days and in the recovery. So, you know, you might want to look at it that way.
Yeah. And I think that's you raise a very important point here. There was another very interesting note that I read this week by another well-known investor, a guy called Howard Marks at a company called Oak Tree Capital. And his note was in the form of a discussion between himself, quite a bearish, cautious, conservative investor, and his son. So Howard Marks is in his 70s. His son must be in his 40s. His son, who's also an investor, who takes exactly that view that you've just talked about, and saying, look, I'm invested in the best companies in the world. You know, these are companies which have long-term growth trajectories. There are going to be moments when they become overvalued. There'll be moments when their price falls. I don't care. I'm in for the long haul, and I'm just going to stick with these. And many, extremely talented and well-known investors take precisely that view. They just invest in the best companies and stay with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to go on to say, Tom, before I interrupted myself, that any change, you know, should be gradual and marginal if you're going to make these changes, and done in the knowledge that these gloomy predictions could be wrong and that you could miss out on some of the best periods in markets ever, which is what happens. It tends to happen at the end of these bubbles. It's you know, it's a difficult choice, but you have to just go in with your eyes open, I guess.
Yes. And the one thing that I do always say to people is there's no harm in having a little bit of cash in your portfolio, because, you know, when markets do become volatile, and we saw this last year, if you don't have any cash to hand, then it's impossible for you to take advantage of those natural ups and downs of the market. So, I, it's not either or. You don't have to be 100% invested in the stock market or 0% invested. Yeah. You know, you can slightly finesse it and just maybe increase slightly the cash proportion within your portfolio so that you're prepared.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, Tom, because I wanted to remember, get this in while I remember, is that one of the things I sort of found very persuasive in that article was the fact that, you know, he says, don't look out for a big event to trigger the top of the market and a stock market fall.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really happen like that. And that is, that, I mean, in my much more limited experience, that is how it happens. It just happens. It's a change in the wind almost. It's not a big event. So if we're going to get big movements this year, don't expect some big event to push things over the edge. It will just happen, and then suddenly, before you know it, you know you're down 5-10%, and then away we go.
That's right. I mean, you know what they say, you know, no one rings a bell at the top or the bottom of the market, and it's true. You can't expect to look out for the event which is going to mark the top of the market. It is a change in sentiment, and not very often, always, you know, the top of the market happens when actually everything looks okay. That's almost by definition, that's why it's top of the market, because everyone who is going to be pulled into the market has been pulled into the market. So, you have to accept that these things are unpredictable. You are not going to catch the top or the bottom of the market.
Indeed. Okay, well, Tom, a bit rambling that one, but I think very interesting as well. That's it for now. Thanks for joining.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.